Talking with John Perkins, the author of The Secret History of the American Empire. And yeah, the phones are locked up, actually. So even though we just gave you those numbers, we're just taunting you. You can't actually make a call right now, but we'll try to get an open line for you in a minute or two. John, let me ask you a quick question before we go to the break, though. Are you familiar with the new book called Shock Doctrine?
Yeah, somewhat. I haven't actually read the book, but I've read reviews of it, and I heard Naomi Klein speak on several programs. I'm very,
Because it follows a similar idea that there's a blueprint, there's a model already in place, and the corporations know just how to take advantage of these areas where disasters happen. And I was interested to see that Aachen in Malaysia, right, in the same area where you were, that was later the subject of some of the biggest impacts of the tsunami, the Christmas tsunami, that you were making a point about how resource rich that area was and how ripe it was for corporations to get involved with it in the first place.
Yeah, and you know, it's also true that like there was rebellion in some of those areas in Aceh and Indonesia and so forth that was really put down as a result of the tsunami. The tsunami was devastating to some of the very legitimate resistance that was going on against brutal dictatorships. And the sad thing about foreign aid is that most Americans think it's altruistic. And in fact, very, very little of it is altruistic. Most all of it goes to helping big corporations. In something like a tsunami or any natural disaster, in the first few days, there's truly altruistic foreign aid that goes in to provide water, sends in tents, medical teams, and so forth to take care of people. But then very quickly, as the billions of dollars get released, so much of that goes to help big corporations. So that, for example, after the tsunami, rather than rebuilding the little fishing fleets, the small fishermen and all the storage and refrigeration and so forth facilities that they need, a lot of the money went to build big fishing fleets rather than helping the little mom and pop restaurants and bed and breakfast that had been on those beaches beforehand. A lot of the money went to big international restaurant and hotel corporations to help them build in that area. And this is typical, unfortunately, of what happens after these disasters. And most of us in the United States don't realize that that's where our taxpayer money is going, that's where our foreign aid money is going. We think that it's going to help the people. And in fact, it usually goes to help our big corporations, which is very sad. In addition, of course, all the construction that is contracted out to our big construction and engineering firms.
We'll leave that there for now. We'll get back to your questions. Everybody's lined up to talk with John Perkins next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Back to the phones for John Perkins. Alan on the wildcard line, West Hollywood on Coast to Coast AM. Alan?
Hey, how's it going? Hi, Ian. Hi, John.
Hi.
Well, this is a fascinating conversation, and John, thank you so much, because I think it takes someone on the inside to expose these things for maybe people to sit up and take notice and really believe it. You start to feel like you're crazy after a while because there's no confirmation anywhere. The evening news doesn't cover it, and I think a lot of people don't want to believe that our government is capable of these things. So I know it's tough for people to accept all of this stuff, but how do you feel the internet will change that with the kind of uncensored information that's available now to a lot of people?
Well, I think there's a lot of hope out there. I'm a very hopeful person, Alan. What we need to do is change these corporations. And I actually think that's a fairly easy job. It's easier than overthrowing the British back in the 1770s. We don't have to do it violently or through that kind of a revolution. We can do it basically through a consumer revolution. And I think the internet can play a huge role in this. All the alternative media can, including this program that we're talking on right now. And we commend Ian for this program, for bringing these things out. There is a lot of alternative media out there. There's a lot of great books that are out now. Ian just mentioned Naomi Klein's new book. And we've got an amazing number of movies that have recently come out, like The Constant Gardener and Blood Diamond and Syriana and, you know, the Michael Moore movies. And regardless of what you may think of them personally, the fact that these things are getting out there, that people are beginning to understand what's going on here, is very important. I just today saw in the Valley of Eli, I can't even know how you pronounce it, but an amazing movie about what's going on in Iraq. So there's a lot going on. I've been traveling around the country since Confessions came out about 2.5 years ago, and I've seen tremendous change in these 2.5 years. I think people really are waking up. I'm encouraged because information is getting out, and in answer to your question, the Internet is a wonderful, incredible way to make that happen.
You know, can I ask you about that? Because all the ones you mentioned, of course, spoke about issues from one political perspective. Is there any room for another political perspective on this and still be truthful?
What kind of another political perspective?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that all of the people all of the films you referenced, Leonardo DiCaprio, the film by George Clooney, Michael Moore, these are well-known Democrats, and they are political activists for Democratic issues, and for each one already kind of has a dog in the fight in the, you know, the Democratic primaries. Is there another side to this? Because when you talked about it before, again, you said this is true. These things are true regardless of Democrat or Republican. So, I mean, is there another side ever to these world events or to these issues that could also be truthful that comes from, say, a conservative or a Republican lens?
Well, I was raised a very conservative Republican. I have a lot of very close Republican friends, many of them quite conservative. As I mentioned, I recently spoke at the Chicago Global Affairs Council, which is considered quite conservative. I find that many people, including very strong Republicans who voted for Bush in both elections, are now saying, enough's enough. We're not going to go down this route ever again. Just the other day, a CEO of a pretty big company who was very staunch Republican says, I'm not voting Republican in the next election. I don't think I'm going to vote Democrat. I don't think I'm going to vote. So I think there's a huge turnaround. I really don't know what political leaning many of these people have that you mentioned. Obviously, Michael Moore is pretty obvious. I don't know whether he's a Democrat. He's certainly not a Republican. So it's hard to say what's going on there. But I think there is this alignment right now, which is unfortunate. I mean, it's interesting to me that the Republican Party right now, it seems to me, is being almost self-destructive. Because I think there's something like 22 seats up in this next election in the Senate, and it's pretty obvious that the very large number of American people are opposed to the war in Iraq, and yet the Republicans will not pass any bill, even a bill that says we want our troops home for at least as much time as they're in Iraq to come home for more that equal amount of training. They just immediately side with the president on all these issues, even though they realize that it may be jeopardizing their position in the next elections. And I find that very interesting and sort of disturbing, too, that it does seem as though opposition right now almost has to come from Democrats because Republicans seem to have such incredible discipline that they're towing the administration's line, which I think is unfortunate. You know, it's not that I'm Democrat or Republican, it's that what we really need right now, and especially in this election year, is a tremendous discussion around these issues. We really need to look at what caused terrorism and what caused 9/11. And I do assume that 9/11 came out of terrorism. And so I ask the question, what caused it? Yes, there will always be some fanatical murderers in the world. There will always be serial murderers. There will always be crazy people. But they don't reach the level of an Osama bin Laden. They don't reach the level of the terrorism we're seeing today of what's going on in Iraq unless there's a huge grassroots movement supporting them. And that grassroots movement comes from desperate people. I've known terrorists. If you came and talked to me after Confessions was written, and I've met others in the past. I talk about this in the books. I have never met anyone who wanted to be a terrorist. These are people who are desperate. They've been pushed off their lands by oil companies or by hydroelectric projects or whatever. They're desperate people, very much like the Minutemen were back in the 1770s. And so we really need in this next presidential election for both Republicans and Democrats to really ask the hard questions. what's behind all of this, and what can we do to create a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren? What has to be done to make that happen in this very interdependent world that we live in today?
And I would say to you, Osama bin Laden falls into the category of a zealot.
Yeah, I think he probably does.
It's not desperate. It's not out of economic desperation. It's just he's a true believer in a cause that says everybody should be Muslim, just like past, you know, zealot Christians have, you know, been known to kill abortion doctors or...
Yeah, but you don't get a huge worldwide following, Ian, unless there's desperation. I agree with you about him, probably. I don't know him personally, but I suspect he is a zealot. But you just don't get that kind of a following. An example, I just came back from Latin America. All throughout Latin America, you'll see posters up on buildings of Osama bin Laden. These are Catholic countries. They're not put there by Muslims. They're put there by people who are saying Osama bin Laden is a David standing up to Goliath. I think that's very, very sad that we've reached a point where anybody that will stand up against the United States is considered a hero. And these are not Muslim populations that are looking at him as a hero there.
He's looking that way
because people are desperate and because they're very angry.
Wildcard line, Tony is in Canada for John Perkins on Coast to Coast AM. Tony?
Yes, good morning. I'm in Oakville in Canada, and I just want to touch on the political lens that you mentioned, and also one of your callers talked about confirmation. I'm actually a candidate in an election right here in Canada, and the NDP, the New Democratic Party, is running on a fairness and social responsibility platform. And I called in a while ago about the tapeworm economy and talked to you about a sitting duck loan bank product, which is a corporate ripoff that people just find absolutely appalling in Canada. We want to put a stop to those kind of things, and we have been speaking about it on our platform.
Very good. John, you want somebody to say that?
I'm not quite sure what that's all about. I'm not in touch with that issue, frankly, and maybe you can give me a little bit more information on that?
I guess he's already gone. Wildcard line, Todd is in California on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins. Todd?
Hey, Ian. Hey, John. Great show. Such important information. John, I think you said earlier that there's been kind of a trend in South America recently of electing more Hugo Chavez types that are saying enough is enough to this type of corrupt economics. Is that right?
Well, yes. I'm not sure that they're Hugo Chavez types. He's extremely histrionic, and I don't particularly like his personal style, but they are all candidates that are saying enough's enough, no more exploitation of our resources. Our resources need to go to help our own people.
My specific question is, could you offer some insight on specifically what the political landscape is going on in Peru right now?
Yeah, you know, Peru is one of these countries that's kind of torn in the middle, and it's been under, it's been pretty much under corporatocracy rule for some time, and it went through this terribly, terribly difficult stage with Fujimoro in the past, and I don't think it's ever quite recovered. I don't know what's going to happen in Peru next. The countries that have voted in these presidents that are saying our resources, and one of the things they're saying is we don't need foreign aid. We have resources of our own, and we want to use them to help our people. And these countries are, well, you mentioned Venezuela, Ecuador, Uruguay, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, and Bolivia, and also in Central America, Nicaragua. And it looks as though in the future, Guatemala may very well follow suit, and possibly Paraguay may follow suit. What happened in Mexico is still pretty mysterious as to who really won there, but Mexico's on that tipping point, too. And Peru, Colombia is still very much a puppet of the United States. Peru is wavering, and it's going to be very interesting to watch that in the future and see what direction it moves in.
As you think back on it, I mean, you hear these countries mentioned, and you reflect back on stories that involved you personally, was there one type of country that was more susceptible to economic hitmen over another? I mean, did you know going into it, oh, this one's going to be a pushover?
In my day, they were all pretty much pushovers. And that's part of what's very interesting about this, Ian, is that every one of those countries I listed, which has gone this way now, or almost every one of them, for most of my lifetime, has been under the rule of a brutal pro-Washington puppet dictator, essentially, serving the interests of the corporatocracy, selling out their resources real cheap to our corporations. And in the last few years, everything's turned around. And it's been an amazing process, a true revolution, but a bloodless one. And what's also interesting is that many diverse factions who are often enemies to each other have come together to make this happen. So, for example, in countries like Ecuador and Bolivia, you had an age-old clash between indigenous movements and the military. It dates back to the Spanish conquest. And in these last elections, those two groups came together to bring in the candidate that they thought would help them, would be nationalistic and populist president, that would help them keep out the exploitation and the privatization of their resources by foreign corporations. To me, that gives a great deal of hope. And all of these have been democratic elections. And it says to me that if that can happen with these diverse groups in places like Ecuador and Bolivia and these other Latin American countries, it can also happen in Africa, in the Middle East, and maybe even here in the United States. I'm often struck by how in I can go into parts of New York City and see Sunnis and Shiites and Jewish people all getting along quite well together.
No, and I'm all for that. I just mean, so were there any characteristics for a country that was going to be more susceptible? I guess if I'm hearing you saying they're just, everybody fell, you know, easily under the jackboot of your task. But I mean, so there wasn't ever a time when you thought to yourself, well, gosh, ooh, I got to go to Asia because Asia is so much harder than working Latin America.
No, I think most of the world was pretty easy for us. And we focused on the countries that had the resources that we really coveted. So we didn't go after Ecuador until oil was discovered in the Ecuadorian jungle. But once it was, we were very confident that we could take over Ecuador. I failed with Jaime Roldós. So I was wrong. He was not corruptible, so he was assassinated. In those days, it was pretty clear to us that if the economic hitman didn't win, somebody else would. And then we look in a place like Iraq, and I talk about that a lot in the book, where both economic hitmen and jackals failed with Saddam Hussein. He would not give in to the bribes of the economic hitmen. We wanted him to follow what had happened in Saudi Arabia in the 70s with the House of Saud, where we totally corrupted them and brought them around. We wanted Saddam to accept something similar. He would not. We sent in the jackals. They couldn't take him out. His security was very good. He had a lot of lookalike doubles, which makes it very difficult to take a man out. And so we sent in the military in 91. And at that point, we could have taken him out too, but didn't want to because he was the kind of strong man that we really like to keep in power. We thought he'd been sufficiently chastised that we could win him over in
the
90s.
That's where it's going to have to hold on to for the moment. You sure are right about the body doubles for Saddam Hussein. The whole country was a body double for Saddam Hussein. It looked like the end of V for Vendetta. All right, so we'll leave it there. We'll come back, though. We'll get the rest of your questions next on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins, The Secret History of America, of the American Empire, next. I'm enjoying this conversation. It's challenging on many levels, and I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the questions that you all have for John Perkins. We have him lined up. We'll try and get an open line for you. Coming up next, The Secret History of the American Empire, and we'll pick up right where we left off just before the break at the bottom of the hour. We'll hear what John had to say more next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Running out of time, want to make sure we get them all in, but I didn't get the opportunity for you there at the bottom of the hour that I'm sure you would have liked for a longer answer, John Perkins, on that last question.
Can you remind me what the question was?
Never mind. No, if you're not hanging on a thought, then that's okay. Let's go east of the Rockies where Greg is in New Jersey on Coast to Coast AM. Greg?
Good evening, gents. I think it's a great topic you got. And you know, the term economic hitman is perfect. My feeling is that I feel like the United States is being selected to die next. But instead of a shot to the head, we're being allowed to die a death of a thousand cuts. And I don't think it's a part of a big conspiracy. I think it's just a part of a few select people in the right places. I mean, when you think about this, and please let me know if you think I'm crazy on this, we're being overrun with illegals, 30 million probably, that provide cheap labor and undermine our culture, our legal system, and what have you in that area. Industries like textiles, steel, automobiles, they're being moved out to Asia or south of the border. The information technology that's been gutted, it's been farmed out to China and India. God knows what's happened to all of our secret data regarding like our nation's telephone and other industries that you know, with this data that's been sent over there, who knows where that's gone to. But I think nowhere is it more apparent than with our national highways that are being sold off to international corporations such as Cintrus. Now, we're here in New Jersey, and it's amazing, no matter how many people have sent tens of thousands of nasty letters to the governor of New Jersey, John Corzine, who's the former chairman of Goldman Sachs, he is determined to sell off the New Jersey Turnpike and the Garden State Parkway
to whom?
Foreign corporation.
To whom?
To Cintrus.
Okay, but tell me why. I'm unfamiliar with this, and I used to drive the Parkway and the Turnpike all the time. So, I mean, who will own it and how? What does
that
mean?
Here's the deal. I mean, it's the same situation that's going on like in Texas. Instead of the tolls being managed by the state, it's being farmed out, not to an American company, but to a foreign-owned company. Cintrus, which is the controlling interest, is done by the King of Spain, Juan Carlos. But the thing is that instead of controlling costs and spending in New Jersey, they're going to try and justify the sale of the Turnpike to cover the costs of this out-of-control spending that we have in the state.
How can they sell the Turnpike? I'm sorry, that's kind of new for me. I don't know about you, John, but I'm completely unfamiliar with this. So I'm sorry, I'm way behind the curve on it. But
it's 100%. There is a huge, right now, John Corzine is being sued in state government right now,
court,
because he refuses to release the study that was done by an international study group regarding the sale of it. So he spent $800,000 of New Jersey taxpayer money to give to an overseas company to study how they can sell the Turnpike. It's unbelievable. And people are going to lose their homes, and they're going to try and enter in the no compete clause. Well, basically, if you any of the roads that run parallel to the Turnpike, you can't improve the infrastructure. And already,
I don't know about that, but that's interesting. I mean,
I think, you know, what that brings up is a very interesting point, because that's what we've been doing to the rest of the world all along. Imagine if you lived in almost any country in South America, Africa, Asia, a lot of the Middle East, all these things would be owned by foreign companies. So, for example, Bolivia Power Corporation, which provides the electricity to La Paz, the capital city, and so much of Bolivia, has been owned by U.S. corporations for many, many years. Just recently, a U.S. corporation sold it to a Spanish corporation. Throughout much of the world, we own their utility companies, their water companies, their sewage companies, their railroad companies, their highways. So I think the indignation that we're hearing here is, frankly, I think it's legitimate, but I think we also have to realize that the rest of the world has been objecting to us doing this for a long time. It's one of the reasons there's so much anger in the world today. Privatization of assets by big international corporations doesn't make anybody happy, and the man I just called in is obviously very upset about what's going on in New Jersey. I agree with him, but I also agree that we shouldn't allow that to happen in Ecuador or Bolivia or Nigeria or Indonesia either.
I lived in New Jersey myself for a couple of years in Monmouth County, and when I was there, it wasn't that long ago, the big number one complaint we heard about the Turnpike and any of the toll roads was that they had always, that they were paying their people too much, that you had toll booth employees that were making $100,000 a year because of unions and overtime, and you know, and some of these guys were making $60,000 a year in retirement, and that was the big complaint at the time when it was government run. Maybe there's a happy medium between those two. Let's go west of the Rockies. Kirsten is in Washington on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins.
Good evening. Good evening, both of you. And first of all, I want to thank you both for your compassionate hearts. Ian, I know you have one, and John, you most certainly have one. And so I want to thank you for that, for what you're doing.
Thank you.
My big question is, and it's everyone I know wants to know, I'm politically active out here, what is the real reason for Darfur? And if you don't have an idea, what intuitively would you think? I would want you to go with intuition if you can, and I will hang up and let someone else in.
Well, Darfur is oil. To make, you know, that's the big story, is oil. It's also borders on the areas where coltan is mined, which, as I mentioned earlier, about 4 million people have been killed in the last decade over these coltan wars. Coltan is used in a lot of our laptops and cell phones and other high technology, and it's only found in that region. And we tend to want cheap technology in the United States and all over the world, cheap computers, cheap cell phones, and other things like that. And so these coltan wars have gone on, and a lot of the coltan is smuggled through Uganda, Rwanda, Darfur, that whole area. So there's a number of resources there, but particularly in the Darfur region, it's an oil situation war. And there's a lot of ethnic background to it also. There's the, you know, there's the what you call the animist groups, the old indigenous peoples of the region who are clashing strongly with some of the Islamic groups and some of the other groups who have more power. So there's that tribal, cultural, racist type of thing going on too. But at the bottom of all of it, as so often is the case, you have this extremely these extremely valuable resources.
Let's go first time caller line, where Chris is in Texas on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins, author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Hi, my question is pretty much, it seems like special interest groups pretty much decide who get to become the president of the United States at most times. So I was just wondering, if somebody like Ron Paul, who says that they want to get out of like NAFTA and all these other organizations that the United States is in, and also do some changing around our own government, if these special interest groups would ever allow someone like that to become president, or would he have to end up running into a jackal? And I'll take my answer off the air.
I think the special interest groups have tremendous amount of power. And, you know, that's not something I personally was ever involved in, so it's a little difficult for me to address that issue. But I think the idea of assassination has had a huge influence in this country. Following the assassination of Jack Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and the imprisonment or assassination of so many of the anti-Vietnam War people and the Black Panther groups and so on and so forth, this country went into kind of a tailspin where there was very little resistance. I've heard Bobby Kennedy Jr. has been quoted to me. I haven't actually heard him saying it, but other people told me that he said that he would not run for public office because he's afraid of that. And whether he said that or not, there's a lot of people who feel that way. So assassination has been a very, very big force in changing politics here. And I think we need to recognize that. We need to come out and talk about it more. Special interest groups have a huge impact. There's a very strong theory that the reason Carter was elected was because after what happened with Nixon and Ford took over, everybody knew that Ford would not be elected on his own right, and that a Democrat would probably win. And so the conservatives on both the Democratic side and the Republican side wanted a guy in there that they knew would not win the next election. And so Carter went in, very decent human being, but very, very unsavvy in the political arena, went in and was given, interestingly, a very liberal guy. If you look at world politics and what he's done since then, but he for some reason accepted as his national security advisor probably the most draconian one we've ever had under either Democrat or Republican, and that's Brzezinski.
Let me ask you a question about that jackal thing. Did the jackals you work with the actual wet ops people that were really doing the hits, not just the economic hits in these countries, did they ever make it look like an accident, or did they just kind of come out and just assassinate
people? Well, they often make it look like accidents. So in Panama with Torrijos and in Ecuador with Roldos, both of those men died in basically the same plane, a twin otter crash. Airplane crashes are one of the best ways of doing it because, you can rig equipment so that the pilot thinks he's flying a lot higher than he actually is and hits a mountain, something like that, or plant an explosive on an airplane, and all the evidence goes up with the crash. So it's very, very hard to prove anything in something like that.
There are still people here in Minnesota that believe that Paul Wellstone was the victim of a political hit.
There's people all over the country that believe that. Oftentimes when I'm speaking during the questions and answers, people ask me about my feelings around Paul Wellstone. So, and that's all over the country. You get a lot of people that certainly feel that way.
Wildcard Line, James is in Washington on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins. James? Do we lose you?
Yes, sleepy.
James in Washington? Yeah, I took a while to get there. Let's go Wildcard Line. Derek is in Canada on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins. Derek?
Oh, hi, gentlemen. I'm a bit disappointed with the characterization that the root of all your problems are just the corporations that have sprung up around your Federal Reserve. Because as I understand it, Thomas Jefferson even said that if you have a central bank, especially one owned by private bankers as you do now, the corporations that grow up around it will usurp the power of the people and the liberty of the people. And I think that's the pretty much the core of the Death Star here. And the biggest threat to Ron Paul, who has said he would abolish the Federal Reserve, is the Federal Reserve, obviously. And these are the same people who brought you World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the list goes on and on. And basically to characterize it as a problem of corporations is a smokescreen. And I was wondering what the guest would think about that.
Well, I think you said it. The corporations that grow up around the Federal Reserve in and of itself is a corporation. The U.S. government's a corporation. If you want to look at it that way, it truly is. But it is the corporations. It's the money, and the Federal Reserve is part of that system. The World Bank is part of that system, even though it in and of itself I wouldn't classify as a corporation. But the big corporations and the economic hitmen use it very much to their advantage as a tool. The Federal Reserve is part of that whole system too. There's no question about that. I agree with you from that standpoint.
Wildcard Line, Eric is in Mesa, Arizona for John Perkins on Coast to Coast AM. Eric?
Thank you, Ian, and great show, John. The last caller was right on. And I wanted to say that, War Churchill said what John said about, what's possibly behind the terrorist actions being of maybe what we should concentrate besides on this next election, besides maybe what the Republicans are going to want to concentrate on, and that's like gay marriage. They're going to make a big thing out of this now with the evangelicals I hear. But, War Churchill got lambasted by the Republicans, and some feared he could even be assassinated because of the rampant nationalism. And these neocons, they used that to get us into Iraq. And so don't expect any patriotic films from the Republicans, Ian, on subjects like that. But I also have a question for Ian. How do you know about all these cameras? And I'm sorry, the port view of what appeared to be that plane crashing into the Pentagon is just not sufficient. We have more cameras than that. They need to release it. They need to do a better job. They need to quell these questions. Thank you.
I think they need to quell the questions. But if you're asking me the question of what do I think of it, you know what? I just recently saw another piece that just reconfirmed my point of view on that. And I'm just going to say it again, and I'll keep saying it every time it comes up from now on, is that there were real people on that plane, and they're really dead. And their families are really devastated, and they're not cardboard cutouts. So let's always remember that. These people are not on this planet anymore to talk about what they went through. Let's be more sensitive about it than just keep dismissing it as saying a plane did not go into that building. Real people inside of that building were killed also, but I don't believe they were killed by a missile launched by our own government at our own building. And I'll just say that. Wildcard line, AJ is in L.A. on Coast to Coast AM for John Perkins. AJ?
Hi, Ian. You're a great interviewer, and I really like you a lot. And, John, I have your book, although I haven't read it yet.
The new one?
Yes, the new book, yes.
Good.
I have been to a crash site real quickly, and within 2 hours of a 737 going down in Chicago, and I have seen not just the devastation, but the debris from a crash site of a commercial jet. And I can tell you this, if there is no debris, luggage, clothing, and bodies, my friend, you can say anything you want, but the likelihood of that event having been an actual commercial jet liner is
Well, sadly, there was lots of luggage. There were lots of body parts.
There were? There were
Were there pictures taken of that, sir? Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I'm really glad, actually, that we don't have a lot of pictures of the body parts. How about you? But do you really need to see that at the end of every plane crash to see body parts to know that it happened?
No, but luggage, I think, would satisfy
There's luggage.
The minds of a lot of people.
There's luggage.
And also the debris that was left at the crash site did not nearly resemble, for example, the engines that would normally break off.
Look, I've read all the same websites you have. I've seen everybody sent me to the same thing. I know every time I say that, I'm going to get another two dozen. Oh, you don't know this. Go to this website and look at these edited photos, and then go to this website and look at those edited photos. I'm with you. Totally save your breath with me on that. You haven't been there. You haven't walked the hallway. Maybe you and I should go and walk the lawn outside of the Pentagon. Would you go with me on that, AJ? You and I walk the lawn of the Pentagon. We talk to the people who lost families on that plane. We talk to the people on the inside that saw it coming, the people that survived, the survivors, and the families that didn't. Would you do that?
Sure.
Okay. And maybe that's what we all got to do sometime is have a big coast-to-coast field trip there. And that's all I'll say. John Perkins, The Secret History of the American Empire. Sorry, got kind of rerouted there at the end. That wasn't my choice. I was just responding to the callers, and we don't screen them out in that way. So, But The Secret History of the American Empire, Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption, a very interesting work. Will there be a third book in the series?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it a third book in the series, but there will be more books, yes.
Okay, the trilogy, I guess, because you've established something here that few people have ever spoken up about before, and it's obviously inspiring a lot of people to reconsider our own American history and the influence of corporations. So thank you for your time tonight.
My pleasure, Ian. I really appreciate what you're doing to bring all this information out. And it's really a great democratic process of getting everybody to participate and ask questions and give their comments. My hat's off to you. Thank you.
Thank you. You can link up to him through our website, coasttocoastam.com. Deus te amat, and I do too.